Life. For 20 years, I've worked with Right to Life of Michigan, and it's just a blessing to talk about life. And one of my key verses is Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. From the time of conception, every human life is precious and irreplaceable. And that's the key. Life is irreplaceable. One of the realities of life after choosing life is that other decision that could be made. And my work with Right to Life of Michigan deals with abortion. Abortion is legal through all 9 months of pregnancy. A lot of people don't realize that. All 9 months of pregnancy, a woman can have an abortion and end the life of that precious and irreplaceable child. So it is so important for us as Christians, as human beings, to support others, to encourage others. And when a woman makes that choice for life after becoming unexpectedly pregnant, we need to help her along that journey. And sometimes that can be complicated. From a Christian worldview, from a church teaching morality, a church working hard towards godly living, and you have these circumstances where an unplanned pregnancy has happened. And usually those are the pregnancies outside of marriage that we're trying to come alongside women, encouraging them and helping them through that process. Interesting statistics that we can glean from abortion data. We know that the number one age group for women having abortions are those teenage girls, teenage through college. And it has been good. The younger girls were not seeing as many abortions, but college age, 18 to 22, is the number one age group. And so those are the girls that are most impacted by the possibility of abortion, just in looking at the data. And so we know, okay, if we understand that women in those age groups are most susceptible, then we know we can target or be more mindful of women, girls who are in those age groups. It's just good to keep talked back in our minds. It's not that we're the ones who are dealing with them, with a youth group, but as a church, working with our youth, working with college age people, they're coming in contact with their friends or friends of friends who may find themselves in an unplanned pregnancy. And so being mindful of that age group is just important as a church and this issue. It's great to be able to help people, but there is that reality that, yes, a lot of people are having, a lot of women have abortions. We look at more than 1 million abortions are performed every year in the United States. And since abortion became legal back in 1973, in every state, over 56 million abortions have been performed. So we have that reality. We have that reality of that of women. Now, I've talked to a lot of women through the years who have had more than one abortion. So we don't know how many women have been impacted, but millions, millions, millions of women have been impacted by an abortion decision, which has ramifications for their life and for their relationships and just what life looks like for them after making that decision. And so as a church, whenever we can encourage women who are facing that unplanned pregnancy for life, that is good. Good because we know we are all created in the image of God and that everyone is precious and irreplaceable, but also because that helps that woman later in life too. All right, I know it's early, but I have a quiz for you. So I hope you've had your coffee. When you think about the United States, how many babies are born in the United States every year? Any guesses? How many babies are born in the United States every year? About?
Lots.
Paula, thank you. That's a good answer.
I was going to say
2 million?
All of them.
2 million?
Yeah.
More.
More.
4 million.
Just slightly less than 4 million.
Wow.
And that's just recently. 4 million babies born.
And then 1 million abortions.
And 1 million abortions.
Wow.
What's important to realize is studies show that about 51% of all pregnancies fall into the unplanned category. 51%.
Wow.
That's a lot. More than half. But when
even us, we plan for Jordan, but not Jonah.
Even 50, right?
And in some ways, we had that surprise. You've got two babies coming, not just one. And so it's, but in our minds, we recognize a lot of pregnancies are not planned. And so in some ways, it's hard for a church to think about, well, you never know when an unplanned pregnancy is going to come along, right? Because that's one of the key things that a lot of people don't recognize about unplanned pregnancies. They're not planned. And so you have, as a church, that reality. You can't say, oh, we know this is how many kids are going to be in the junior high youth group, you know, coming up, and hopefully we can bring in more kids and plan for that ministry. This is something that you can't plan the number. But there are things that we can do. Kathy, you had your...
Yeah, I was just wondering, with so much fertility treatment and selective reduction, is that included in the abortion numbers?
The abortion numbers, yes, at least in Michigan. Now, it is complicated. States have different recordings. Some states don't provide the numbers. States like California and even the city of New York no longer submits data to the Centers for Disease Control, but yes, like in Michigan specifically, that would be included. For now, with fertility, not the embryos that are...
No, I mean like when somebody has five babies and they take two out.
Right. Yep. That is included in the abortion data in Michigan. Anything that intentionally ends the life of a human being before birth is recorded, and the doctors it's on the doctors to record that, but we feel like we've got, from the years, it looks like we've got pretty good data in the state of Michigan as far as what's happening here. Other states I couldn't speak for, but from what we know, from what's been gathered, you know, it is the issue. And that's why I had a chuckle one time. I was speaking to women in Southern Michigan, a women's group, about the life issue, and they said, it must be really depressing to work for Bright Life of Michigan. So, well, no, it's not. It's not, because we focus on life and we celebrate life. And it's about education and helping people know there are options for women. One thing that's been, we've been learning through the years, and that's, you know, we move forward by what we've learned from other people regarding this issue. But one thing that really struck me, because I've gone to training about, you know, adoption and, you know, raising a child, parenting, and then an abortion. Because when a woman is pregnant, they see those three options. Okay, I can parent this child. I can place this child into a loving family for adoption, or abortion. So, you know, a young woman will see those options. Well, what we're learning is adoption, as wonderful as that is, and we've talked to kids who have been adopted, we've talked to parents who have adopted children, and what a blessing that is for families. We see that the reality is that woman first has to decide, okay, life or death. Those are the options. Will I move forward with this pregnancy, or will I choose abortion? And when you've got a lot of unplanned pregnancies, those are the decisions, those first two decisions. She has to first get to, I'm going to choose life. And then from there, you know, helping her through that process. But as a church, as a ministry, as an opportunity, if there are things that we can do, that we can plan for, to be supportive for women who are in that situation, who are facing an unplanned pregnancy. All right, I still have a couple more quiz questions, even though it's early. Just to see, you know, which state has the highest birth rate in the whole United States? Which state has the highest birth rate?
Births per capita?
birth rate, yeah, like per 1,000 women.
Kentucky.
No.
New York.
California.
Puerto Rico.
Michigan.
No, no.
Come on, there's only 50 options. We're narrowing it down.
The state with the highest birth rate is Utah.
Really?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yep.
Which state has the lowest birth rate?
Maine.
No.
Massachusetts.
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
It had to be somewhere in New England.
The opposite
then,
of the Mormons.
You know, other states too, you see Massachusetts and Maine and Connecticut are in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Falls into that.
It's surprising with all the men.
And is that because they just lean more towards that?
It's just the numbers.
Interesting.
I mean, you can see in Utah with the Mormons, they focus on family, and probably less of that in other states.
New England,
Not
that one.
But with life after choosing life, I thought it would be good to just share one woman's experience. With working with Right to Life of Michigan, I was able to meet a lot of different people, neat people. This is the author of the book, Tiny Blue Lines. She was a Christian girl in college who became pregnant. Did not plan to become pregnant, but became pregnant, authored this book, and speaks around the nation about unplanned pregnancies, how churches, how people can respond in a positive way. And it's good to hear her perspective. And she writes a whole book on unplanned pregnancy and how we can respond. The golden nugget from that book is there are no right or wrong ways as a church to respond. There are a lot of ways that you can respond. And I'll talk a little bit more about her suggestion. But this is just her take. Everyone is different. And this isn't there's no formula that you can just, okay, if we do this, one, it would be great if we knew the answer so this would never happen. But as a society, we will be dealing with unplanned pregnancies. I don't see that ever ending. And so, okay, that's a reality. Unplanned pregnancies are a reality. How can we respond? How can we best respond and be prepared? And so this is her take about what happened when she became pregnant. When I found out I was pregnant, my first thought was to seek help. I was terrified and in denial. I turned to the first place that I thought of, my university's health center. When I finally worked up the courage to walk in, I took yet another pregnancy test and waited for the results. When the nurse practitioner called me into her office, there was no denying it any longer. I was pregnant. And I broke down in uncontrollable tears in her office, and I asked basic questions, like how would I get health insurance, or where could I find prenatal care? The nurse simply shrugged her shoulders. My sobs filled the room as she exclaimed, as she examined her chart in silence. After a few minutes, she stood up and said, I have other patients to see, but you can stay in here if you want. She closed the door behind her, walking out on me without so much as offering a Kleenex. Your first words to a woman facing an unplanned pregnancy matter. And then she goes on, and again, this is her perspective. I know how sensitive I was during my pregnancy. I resented that people assumed I was in need of spiritual guidance. I resented that people assumed I was in need of spiritual guidance or looking for a handout. The simple fact of the matter was that I was a normal Christian young woman who had made a mistake. So that was her perspective. And I know, at least, you know, in my own thinking of helping other people, she recognized her mistake, and, you know, she shared, I resented when people thought I needed spiritual guidance. When I, to me, that's the first thing you want to jump to. You want to help guide them spiritually, because obviously there was a problem, a breakdown, something happened, and we're in this situation. But she shares how she resented how people, you know, thought she needed to have spiritual guidance. But she goes on to say, help women by letting them lead what their needs are, being open, listening. And we know there are so many different ways that we can be available to women and help them. But it's taking the lead from them, what they need. And later she does explain that she recognized she did need spiritual guidance. She did need help coming back into the church and being involved and not feeling on the outskirts, you know, doing wrong in that situation. But I loved how she shared, there's no one way to do it. There are a lot of different ways. And with her and her position and her ministry now in helping people, she hears from different people. And so I'm going to talk just a little bit about her suggestions as far as, all right, what can, and she focuses, what can religious organizations, what can churches do to help women who are facing that unplanned pregnancy? And like I said, this is a ministry that you cannot, you don't plan the numbers, but you can plan for it happening. It is a reality, it happens. And so what are things that we can do as a church so that we can be helpful if and when the time comes, so that we will have what's needed to help women in crisis? Shawnee Bruce, who I just read that part from her book, she suggests that the first thing to realize is that the women are in crisis. It is a crisis. This was not planned. It was not anticipated. The whole future looks different when a woman becomes pregnant and she doesn't know what to do. And going back to just the statistics regarding abortion, number one reason, women who have had abortions say they got an abortion, the number one reason, wrong timing. It interfered with their way of life. It interfered with school schedule. It interfered with work. And that was the number one reason women chose abortion instead of life, because of the timing. It's hard to think about what life is going to look like when you need to take care of another person and how that can impact your life. But recognizing that crisis can make a big difference. Recognizing, okay, they're in crisis. One thing that has helped me the most when women, many years ago, Right to Life of Michigan has a 1-800 number available 24 hours a day. In the beginning, we would take some of those calls during the day, and then a calling service that specialized in unplanned pregnancies would take the night calls. So the women would call during the day, and they would be in crisis. They just found out they're pregnant. They don't know what to do. They need to be connected to a pregnancy center or help agency. But it was this, I need to know right now. I need this, you know, I need this information right now. I need to, you know, I have to have this figured out right now. And after just taking a breath, pausing, you have time. Women who are pregnant have time. For younger women, 9 months seems like an eternity. Like, how could I, in 9 months, a pregnancy, 9 months? That's my whole life. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for young people, especially, to think about, 9 months of my life. I don't even know what I'm gonna, you know, do next week with my friends. How can I think 9 months in advance to prepare for a baby? But helping women just take a breath, pause, you have time. You have time. I know it's a crisis, but you have time. And keeping things in perspective. It helps a lot for people to know a lot of people have gone through this. A lot of people have gone through this. And a lot of women, and women are strong. Women can do this. We know it's hard, But pumping women up, letting them know, okay, this is your new reality, but let's come alongside and figure out what we can do. But Shawnee's just focuses on, okay, first, as people who are helping, we need to realize she is in crisis. And we can be the calm, steady voice, the help alongside, but recognizing that she is in crisis. And then two, Shawnee says, focus on the mother. You know, so often, baby, 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 we need to focus on the baby, we need to save the baby. Well, we can't save the baby if we can't reach the mother. And so we have to focus on the mother so that she knows we're there for her, that we're helping her during that decision. And the other tip that Shawnee gives is encouraging her by keeping things in perspective. Keeping things in perspective. And so those three things, realizing, yes, a woman is in crisis during an unplanned pregnancy. Even though we realize more than half of the pregnancies are unplanned, women are in crisis, families are in crisis with an unplanned pregnancy. Focusing on the mother. I think that's especially true when we think of unmarried women who don't have that family support right there. Dealing with, if they're involved in the church, dealing with that reality of how people view them or how they perceive people are viewing them during this situation. Working through that and encouraging her, you know, by keeping things in perspective. Yep, this is a really, really tough situation, but you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay, and there are a lot of examples now, and as we are able to communicate in a lot of different ways, there's blogs about unplanned pregnancies and how women have responded, how women have continued with their schooling. And again, another blessing of working with Right to Life of Michigan for so many years, I've been able to interview and talk to these women who have faced the unplanned pregnancy and have shared, you know what, yes, that was not planned, but this has made me a better person. This, I am a better student. I am a better, you know, I'm doing better in my job because of the responsibility I have to care for someone. But helping them know, too, that they can work through this, that you're there to help them. And so a few ways that as a church we can be prepared if that happens is being mindful. All right, in Michigan, there are over 150 crisis pregnancies centers in our state that are in place to help women who are experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. They are there, they are ready to go, they are staffed. This is what they do. It's amazing. They are there. Many of them are volunteers, but they're there to help women who are facing an unplanned pregnancy, to step in, to help, and to come alongside. As people in our church, we need to be mindful, okay, what are the resources in our community? We need to know where these pregnancy centers are, what's available to us in the community. And we're aware of that and being mindful of that. And another thing, too, as a church, it's thinking about, okay, if this happens, how will I respond? Whenever I talk to college students about the life issue, about unplanned pregnancies, because of that age group, 18 to 22, helping them think through, okay, if somebody comes to me and says, I'm pregnant and I don't know what to do, how will I respond? What will be my response? As kids in college and encouraging our young people, yes, we don't want this to happen to you, but your friends may come to you and say, I'm pregnant and I don't know what to do. How will you respond as a friend? How, you know, what can you do? Parents, you know, who have young college-age children who have friends, you know, if somebody comes to you, how will you respond? I'm pregnant and I don't know what to do. what, thinking about that, thinking about what the options are and how you can respond is very important. To not, and Shawnee too talks about, don't panic, you know, don't panic when somebody tells you. But I've had a lot of calls too to the office. My daughter's friend just came to me and she's pregnant and we don't know what to do. And that's when it's great to plug into the crisis pregnancy centers. The pregnancy centers deal with this every day. They are dealing with unplanned pregnancies. They know how to help women in need better than I could ever imagine because they deal with it every day. They specialize in helping when there's a young girl who needs to tell her parents that she's pregnant. That's what they do. That's what they're trained to do. They're counselors in the area. And so plugging into these resources that are available, we're blessed in Michigan. We have a lot of great resources in our state to come alongside and to work with churches. But too, when we think about how can we be prepared, you know, that's one way, knowing that there are other people who can help us in the situation. And to not panic, but to come alongside, help her during this process, to know that we're here to help.
Would there be a directory of those centers on the Right to Life website?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a directory of all the centers. You can search by city, by county, and find all the contact information for all the centers, including adoption agencies. But again, it's just letting women know. First, you don't need to panic. You know, take a deep breath. We're here. But it can be complicated with churches who, you know, are trying really hard so this doesn't happen. But being prepared when it does.
I'm just thinking that if I were in this situation, I have Pam. So
that's really, you do. You all have that's, Pam.
That's really easy. If I didn't have Pam, you know, as one of the leaders of our church, I'm just thinking through this process of it would probably be beneficial to make a contact at a local pregnancy resource center.
Yes.
And so if someone came to me, my girlfriend's pregnant, or a young woman came to me, I'm pregnant, I could say to her, I have a friend at this place.
Yes.
Let's go talk to her.
Right. Hmm. Yes. Going that, not just knowing, okay, well, here's the resources, here's a place, here's a building, but actually going there and making that contact with the people who work there. And two, honey, you made a very good point. When we're coming alongside women, going with them to that pregnancy center, not just saying, oh, here's the address.
Yeah. Google it.
Good luck. Yeah. It's on the Right to Life of Michigan website. But coming alongside, going with them, and walking with them through those first initial steps, you know, getting that connection. But that is one thing we can do as a church organization is, okay, let's be mindful of what's available in our community. And when we think about that, again, what can we do to be prepared or to be mindful of the life issue? I get so excited when I hear pastors talking, and we're so blessed at Celebration Bible Church to be just proudly pro-life and speaking about life and the value of human life, but that's not the case in a lot of other churches, and I've had a lot of conversations with people who are frustrated that the life issue isn't talked about in their churches, they don't know what to do, how do we move forward, but it's thinking, okay, there are a lot of ways that we can build this culture of life in our churches. It doesn't have to be, you know, the preacher talking about the sanctity of human life every Sunday. In thinking about pregnancy centers, there's a great way that we can be a help to them, too, as a church. Having something so simple as a diaper drive or calling them to see what needs do you have that we as a church might be able to help with, whether it be diapers. For our volunteer party at Right to Life in Michigan last year, we wanted to be a support and a blessing to the pregnancy center near our office right there on 28th Street. So we said, okay, do you have any specific needs? Yes, we need, I can't remember, you know, size, whatever, diaper. That's what our need is right now. We need to help women with this specific need or baby formula. And so calling and not just making a collection of whatever, but asking, okay, what do you specifically need that would be helpful? What are some of your needs? But in doing that, bringing awareness, even to our office at Right to Life of Michigan, with our volunteers that we work with, we had this volunteer party. They were able to support the pregnancy center. And some people volunteering at Right to Life of Michigan weren't even aware that there was a pregnancy center right up the street, you know, right close to us. And so we may think that people are very aware of different resources, but that's not the case. And even something like having that in your bulletin, hey, we are doing a diaper drive for this pregnancy center, brings awareness to the issue. It brings awareness that, yeah, unplanned pregnancies are happening in our community. There are needs. Yep, this is a resource for our church that we can get tapped into and be mindful of. I love to when I've heard of pastors who, in part of just working with the life issue, affirming human life, when a couple or a single parent, a mom is pregnant, you know, praying for that family in church, praying for that new life that's coming alongside and publicly praying for that family. Again, it just reinforces, hey, we take human life seriously. We support all life. So we know it's created in the image of God, that their every life is just irreplaceable. And as we can come along and do little things like that, it does make a difference. Partnering with the pregnancy centers, praying for women who are facing unplanned pregnancies, again, a reality in our communities, in our churches, and just being open to what they can do. Having information about the pregnancy centers, you know, on your information table at your church can also be very helpful for someone who may need that information or will know later, oh, if I need it, you know, there's something there. Did you have your hand up?
Yeah. What percentage of churches are willing to minister to unplanned pregnancies of young ladies? I know a number of them say, if you're pregnant, you're out. If you were teaching, you're out. No positions are available to you, so you're persona non grata. Mm-hmm. So what kind of help is that?
Well, I cannot tell you any percentage of churches, you know, how they respond. But that is part of the educational work of the groups like Right to Life of Michigan. How can we, you know, as Christians, and this is just speaking broadly because not all Christians would agree, but as Christians, you know, I believe, and I know scientifically, life begins at conception. There is a unique life there. We know from the Bible that we're created in the image of God. I see it as a very important ministry to be supportive to women facing an unplanned pregnancy. Is it pretty? A lot of times, no.
Sometimes when I'm substituting at the high school, I'll see girls that are carrying out a pregnancy, and you know, you have that reaction, and you try to avoid it, that, you know, they shouldn't have done that.
I know.
But yeah. In reality, they're doing the right thing.
I know.
So what kind of a thing can we say to be supportive?
Mm-hmm. And Shawnee, in her book, Tiny Blue Lines, talks about that. She said the best thing that she ever heard when she was facing that unplanned pregnancy, and again, this is a Christian girl who is in college. She's an RN nurse. She's graduated from college. But she said the most helpful thing for her when she was pregnant from people from church or wherever was, Congratulations. Keep it at that. Congratulations. For people who were closer to her, she said, it was really helpful when they shared pregnancy stories, you know, for younger women to, oh, you know, how, congratulations, I hope your first trimester goes well. Mm. Or, you know, I hope you don't have too much morning sickness, you know, or something along those lines. That's what she said was most helpful. Congratulations. Because, yeah, you're right. They're the ones doing the right thing.
As a church, do you think we have to encourage these girls to raise these kids or to put them up for adoption? I mean, I see that's a... most of the time, I think in a lot of these situations, it'd be great if they could put these kids up for adoption, but I'm afraid that it's often the kids that... they choose to have the kids when they don't have the resources. And my daughter is an infant adoption specialist for Bethany Christian Services, and you know, they have a list 3 years long of people waiting to want to raise these kids and have the resources, and you know, they have to go through a whole lot to, you know, to do that. And it's just, and sometimes if you I guess I kind of worry if you celebrate these kids too much. We had a problem at our church. We had an unplanned pregnancy. We've had more than one at our church. And the question among the ladies is, do you throw her a baby shower? Because then the other girls say, you're rewarding her for this behavior. And other people say, hey, it's a mistake and we just want to support her. And I understand both sides.
I do too. Absolutely.
And, you know, I think just some people outside the church decided they were going to, you know, I thought it was a good resolution. Some women in the church decided they were going to throw her a baby shower, but wasn't an officially sanctioned church shower, you know.
And that's where it's not pretty. It's not. And there's no answer for this is what a church should do in this circumstances. Because every circumstance is different. But you talked about, should we encourage adoption? What I hear from women who are in this situation is they have to make that decision. They have to be the ones to make that decision. I had an awesome intern from Calvin that I worked with at Right to Life of Michigan. She had an unplanned pregnancy in college. She planned to get married to the father. This is all part of it, but then kind of knew in the back of her mind, you know, this really isn't a marrying kind of man. But they got engaged, the wedding was planned, and it was about a month or so before that wedding that she knew, this isn't where I want my life to go. This isn't the right person. Yes, he is the father of my child, but this isn't where I want to go. She came to that, you know, and her parents were talking with her and coming alongside her. But it's helping, you know, helping the young women or women work through that.
Don't the guys have some kind of parental rights too? So even if you want to give the child up for adoption, the guy also has to sign off on it, and they often don't want to.
I know.
Surprisingly.
I know. Yeah, that is something that's so schizophrenic in our law system right now. Because a woman who's pregnant, she can have an abortion, and the father has no say. Period. And that's been established by law that he cannot keep her from getting an abortion. But if she has that child, he is obligated for 18 years to pay child support and to be part of that. And so, yes, again, that's a complicated system. Now, this intern that I worked with, the marriage off, and then she's looking at the reality, there are a lot of people who would want to adopt, are in a better situation. She was able to work through that weeks before the baby was born and make an adoption plan. And that's what she did. But it is, like I said earlier, it is first life and then coming alongside. And that's, Bethany is one of the best as far as bringing people in, letting them work with the counselors, encouraging them. It doesn't matter, even if you're thinking of parenting, even if a girl is set on that, working with someone, and we're so fortunate here in the Grand Rapids area to have Bethany and have the Pregnancy Center, Pregnancy Resource Center that we can tap into, but to work with those people that's their specialty and can help, and just help women think about things that they don't even know to think about yet when they're facing an unplanned pregnancy.
Do the girl that decides, I'll have my baby and give it up for adoption, is that expensive for her?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's another thing, too. There's a lot of misunderstanding as far as there are a lot of different ways through adoption plans, but the best thing is to work with an organization that specializes in that. Mm-hmm. And, no, they do a great job taking care of women and helping women with the medical expenses, working through that process, and, again, coming alongside. Mm-hmm. And when you can have and tap into the organizations that's what they do, we're in a good spot. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, it seems like this whole topic would be and you know how churches sometimes have a board of elders that decide the official policy of the church?
Right.
It seems like this would be something the whole church should talk about. You know, in other words, because it is messy. And it is something that you could see some people in the church think, you know, that we have to act this way. And other people think, no, we have to act this way. And it seems like even if the church knows it's messy, at least they're able to work together in a messy situation to make the best of it, instead of having just a board of elders say, this is our official stance on unplanned pregnancies in the church, you know, and then nobody really knowing what's going on. And I could see that would be, because I don't know how do women in unplanned pregnancies feel about going to church even. I can imagine they feel very convicted and very, very stressed out.
And too, you have that. You have that reality, that shame.
I know that in Bolivia, we had two girls that were 16 in the church that I attended that right about the same time got pregnant. Mm. And one of them almost immediately got married. You know, it was they had a nice wedding. They didn't get married in the church, but they had a nice wedding, and they immediately. And the other one really felt like the guy that she was dating was not a good guy, and we worked with her, and as a board, we prayed with her, and we stood with her in front of the church, and she admitted this, and we prayed for her as a church. And it was very supportive, you know, as we walked through this. So they were handled totally differently.
Right.
Actually, the one who got married, they have a really good marriage, and she is doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, the other one, you know, went through a lot more struggles, but I walked with her through a lot of those, and we, you know, but they were so, and some of it, you know, it's the family and how they want to handle it,
yes,
and the shame that they feel, like the one that got married, I mean, that's just what we're going to do. You know, we're not going to go through any of this shame stuff,
right?
You know,
yeah.
So it's just, it's hard to say, you know.
It is, and that's where every circumstance is different. And when you have a different family support system in place, that can make a world of difference for a young girl who is facing that. I think it is. It's just really challenging for churches. I think it's great to talk about, but it's one of those things where it is okay. If this is what we're going to do, there's always these other circumstances. There's always, and one thing too, we've been talking more about with Right to Life of Michigan is the reality of pregnancy from assault. Mm-hmm. And that reality. We're learning more and more that women are becoming pregnant from assault, not by their choice. And so, again, all right, is that a different circumstance for the church? Does the church respond differently to a woman who was assaulted and became pregnant and is dealing with this, as opposed to a couple who's been dating a long time and she becomes pregnant, or somebody who, you know, we have a hook-up society. Kids talk about going out on a date and having sex, different situations, and how, you know, how to respond. And again, that gets back to, we would love as a church to never have to deal with this. We would love to never have to deal with this. But we look at the data and we recognize, okay, this is a reality in our society. Our churches are in our societies. We have people in our churches who have these challenges. But as far as like a baby shower or not a baby shower, you do, it's a challenge. But having people to come alongside and knowing the resources in your community is a great place to start.
I'm just thinking too, if I encourage one path or another too strongly, mm-hmm. and the person, the woman chooses that path and then regrets it, she's regretting it because of me. And every time she regrets it, she'll think, I hate him, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know,
you're used to that, though, Brian.
I'm speaking from experience, Jim. That's why this is... and so, to like you've talked about, to show these are the realities of each choice, and help them to see what they can expect, and encourage them to rely on the Holy Spirit to help them make a good decision at this point. Even if they didn't make a good decision before, they can make a good decision at this point.
And again, it's letting her be the lead. She leads, and we come alongside. But being open enough so that she knows, you know, that there has to be a safe place or a safe person or somebody that she can talk to in the church. And feel, you know, if it's brought to someone's attention, know, okay, this is how we can respond as a church. And again, it's hoping that this never happens, but, you know, it does happen. And sometimes it's not happening maybe to people in our church, but they're friends or people who are acquaintances, and then the church can come alongside and be supportive.
It seems like legally they either have to give them up for adoption when they're born, or keep them the rest, you know.
Yeah.
What if they do have regrets when the child is 5 or 6 weeks old? Is there any option to be able to give them up for adoption at that point?
Yeah, there are. There are a lot of options. Oh, there are a lot of options. And adoption has changed through the years as far as what both the families who are adopting and the mothers and fathers, if they're part of the picture, what's available, and what, as far as open adoption or closed adoption, how much information is shared. Families, it's very unique. Everyone's different with these adoptions. Some of these families get together 2-3 times a year.
Yep.
And others are completely closed. There's no information shared as far as, okay, the spectrum is whatever people are comfortable with on both sides, for both the families adopting and for the mothers and fathers.
What about age 13?
Statutory rape.
Paula, you have a...
Well, this is a story that's been in my family a long time, and it's, my grandmother was born in like 1898, and when she got married and had her children, she would never tell them when their anniversary was. It was always a secret. And me, being the nosy person that I am, I like to rummage through her stuff in the attic. And anyway, one day I found a paper marriage certificate that was 2 months before my uncle was born. And we're talking 1918 or 1920 or something. And her mother died young. She lived with father and brothers. I just can't imagine her life. And then that my grandfather would wait that long to marry her, you know. But she had six children, 2 died, and she was always very protective of me, and I think it was because those twin daughters died. But, you know, just think about what her life was like. As a teenage, almost probably a teenage young mother at that time in history. No support, I'm sure, from any church or people back then. So it's just,
well,
it's a story I tell my granddaughters, and then it's a chance to talk about. So
there are a lot of those stories in families.
When those stories were kept in the closet for years, mm-hmm. even growing up. I mean, you didn't see girls in school when they were pregnant. Mm-hmm. If their parents found out they were pregnant, they sent them off to yep. grandparents' house somewhere, or aunt, or maybe to a special school.
Yep.
You never saw that. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, you see girls in school, they're pregnant, they're, you know, it's yep. it's like a, so what? Who cares? Mm-hmm. But those types of stories have been, you know, and like you said, everybody's got them in their family. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm for adoption all the way, you know, and, you know, it's a special thing. And I look at, you know, I think of the mother, you know, what she had to give up, you know, that's a big choice. Mm-hmm. In our situation, it wasn't that big of a deal because it was out of the country.
Sure.
But I look at girls in the United States. That's a big decision for them to make, to give up that child. Mm-hmm. Being able to see, because I've never experienced, but being able to see my four grandchildren born. Mm-hmm. For me, you know, the first time I saw that, I thought, you know, how could a woman give birth to a child and then give it up? I mean, I bawled when my first grandchild was born. It was an experience that I had never experienced, and I will never forget that experience. But the whole thing of how could a mother give that little bundle up?
Some of them change their mind at birth.
There are, and when we were adopted family. It is. It is very hard. And when we were thinking of going through adoption many years ago, there were many cases in court that were going on in American adoptions at the time, that parents or people, that adoptive families that had adopted children, raised them for a few years, then the biological parent comes back and says, I want my child back, and courts ruled in favor of them and take them away from the family, these children, the only family they knew. And I guess that's why, that was the purpose, that was the reason why we chose against American adoption. We were going to go for an adoption. And, you know, so there's a lot of circumstances in all ways, you know. But I just, you know, after our granddaughter was born, how can a mother go through that and, you know, and look at that baby? It's a life. And then just say, no, I don't want it.
Right.
You know, give it up. And it is very difficult for them to do that. And they're doing the right thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I still think, you know, it's just, how could they do it?
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes they look at that baby and realize that they love it. Mm-hmm. Love it so much that they know they can't raise it. Mm-hmm. And want,
yeah, that's true.
That's what's mm-hmm. best mm-hmm. for it. You know, that does.
Yeah.
That does happen too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's most of it. I think they say, you know, I can't raise this child and give this child a good family myself,
right,
or a good home. I love it, but I can't take care of it.
Sure.
So I want to give it to a family that can give it a good home.
And then occasionally you hear these wonderful stories where a mother who has given up a child. I have a cousin who gave up a child for adoption. None of us ever knew it, that she'd had this baby. And when she was probably in her, I don't know, late 30s, maybe 40s even, she had to have been even older than that she reconnected with this woman mm-hmm. who at that point was in her 20s and had children. So my cousin finds out that she's had grandchildren, and she has a wonderful relationship mm-hmm. now with this daughter that she gave up, who is a Christian. And I mean, it's a sweet story. You know how God sometimes restores those.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. All right, we are running out of time. I've got a couple handouts from Right to Life of Michigan. One that's helpful.
Another one is it?
They're both excellent handouts. I'll let you pass
that one.
One is helpful for churches, just different ideas. And this is geared towards Michigan churches because it's from Right to Life of Michigan. There are over 100 local pro-life groups here in the state of Michigan that you can connect with, that churches from any part of the state could connect with. And it's a great resource and a great starting point. But also just different ideas about prayer and the youth groups and different presentations. And so help yourself to one of those. And then the second one is also an excellent handout with just pro-life scripture references. A great reminder of, you know, looking at how God is the creator of life, how life begins at conception. The unborn child is a member of the human family, and it's good. It's good to protect children and to be mindful of that. But just a quick breakdown of pro-life scripture references. And then just to wrap up, a reminder from Shawnee, who I read her take on experiencing a unplanned pregnancy. But looking at, all right, there is no, I wish I could give you a handout and say, this is what you do so that every church can be prepared for unplanned pregnancies. It doesn't exist. Every circumstance is different. And as a church, being mindful of the reality, unplanned pregnancies happen. Statistically, we're seeing that more than half of pregnancies are unplanned. And two, the reality that women who are not married are becoming pregnant, and it's not planned. And so how can we respond lovingly as a church, letting her lead, coming alongside, letting her lead, but being there, being open, and being supportive, supporting her, encouraging her, helping her keep everything in perspective with the situation. That can be hard when you're facing an unplanned pregnancy. And especially for young women, to think about 9 months, that's a really long time for them. You know, a lot of us will look back, 9 months, that's nothing. For a young person, that seemed like eternity. And then to just being open to help, and being prepared, trying to think about as people in our churches, you know, what can we do to know about the resources? And that's when it's great to be able to plug into places like Bethany and Pregnancy Resource Center. That's their specialty. That's what they do. But I think God wants us to protect human life, and there are lots of ways to do that. But one critical way for a church is to come alongside women who are facing an unplanned pregnancy the best way that we can. All right.
My mother always taught me that in a marriage, the first child comes anytime, because brides are so young they don't know how long to carry them, and the rest of them all come 9 months later. But we have a situation in our church where 5 generations where the mothers have been 14 when they were pregnant. 5 generations.
And that's where, you know, they keep working with our youth groups and churches and being willing to talk about it. And a lot of that is with families. Being willing to talk about, I tease my mom and dad, I still haven't had my talk yet. But as families, being willing to talk about life issues, in churches, being willing to talk about it, and it's awful and awkward, but being willing to talk about those things so that we can help guide our young people. Mm-hmm. And so again, you know, it's something that we hope never happens. We hope that we can be part of education and work with our youth and keep them on that straight and narrow path. Mm-hmm. But then too, we have this big thing called reality. And we can learn a lot just from the statistics of pregnancy, and as churches, you know, being prepared to respond, being open to responding. I mean, I think that's a big part of it, because it's messy and it's ugly, and it'd be so easy to just say, well, you better, you know, there's the phone number, you know, go over there. But coming alongside, you know, and helping people.